Hello, sex fans, and welcome back. Today is Wednesday, February 11th, 2009, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge with your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. That would be me.
Right, lads. Now, I know there's not a faint heart among you, and I know you're as anxious as I am to get into close action. But we must bring him right up beside us before we spring this trap. That will test our nerve. And discipline will count just as much as courage.
Close action and discipline. You guys are way ahead of me. Special announcement. Today's podcast marks my second anniversary of bringing you these audio editions of my sex advice column. Why, thank you. You know I couldn't do this without all the little people. To celebrate this milestone, I've decided to launch a new series of podcast interviews called Sex Edge-ucation. In this series, we'll take a look at the fascinating world of fetish sex and kink. We'll touch on topics from the familiar to the exotic. I guarantee that our investigation will be interesting, stimulating, and very informative. And I can say that with such confidence because we will be chatting with prominent educators, practitioners, and advocates of unconventional sexual expressions and lifestyles from all over the world. This new series, which premieres today, will continue to appear on Wednesdays. My regular weekly podcast will continue on Mondays. I'm exceptionally pleased to welcome my first guest in this series, the Toronto-based yet internationally known and respected bondage artist, educator, leather title holder, and dom. My inaugural guest is none other than the man they call Dart. You know you're good when you only have to use the one name. You can visit Dart at his website, dartsdomain.com. Today's special anniversary podcast is brought to you by the ideal sponsor for this fetish and kink series, Dr. Dick's Stockroom. You'll find this treasure trove of sexually stimulating toys, implements, and fetish wear and gear right there on the front page of drdicksexadvice.com. Look for the My Stockroom tab. You will surely enjoy shopping at Dr. Dick's Stockroom because it's just so damn fun and easy. Yes, sir, sex fans, you can spare yourself the embarrassment of skulking down to your local sex emporium to pick up all those nasty toys you've been drooling over. You can forget about seedy storefronts and unsavory neighborhoods, and you don't have to worry about leering salesmen scrutinizing what you buy. Why? Because you shop from the privacy of your own computer. That's why. Thanks to Dr. Dick's Stockroom, it's never been easier or more discreet to be a big fat pervert. Be sure you take a moment out of your hectic schedule and visit My Stockroom today. You'll be so glad you did. Okay, on with the show. Welcome, Dart, and thank you so much for joining us. I'm delighted that we could make this time to be together. As you know, you and I are launching my new podcast interview series called Sex Edge-ucation. And what an auspicious beginning it is, too. Wouldn't you agree?
I would agree, yes.
Would you like to say hello to the nice people?
Bonjour, everybody. It's great to be here.
Where are you exactly?
I'm in Toronto, Canada, actually.
Yes. So this is an international sensation.
Yes, we're crossing the country line now.
I hope we don't get in trouble.
Oh, I don't see why we should.
So listen, Dart, I've been spending a lot of time on your website, Dart's Domain. I've learned so much by reading your blog and listening to your podcast. You are such an accomplished fellow. Holy cow. I confess to being a bit intimidated sharing the airwaves with such a mensch.
Oh, well, you're going to make me blush, Richard.
And you're such a pretty to look at, too. How do you stand yourself?
Oh, well, I'm the one who has to live with myself, so
Okay.
but thank you so much. I'm very, very flattered by the compliments.
Well, I think our audience will see that too when they get a load of your images on your site. But wait, you are not just a pretty face. You are an insightful and sex positive kind of guy. And I knew right away that I wanted to pick your mind on the very sensitive topic of that is getting a lot of attention today, and the topic is power play.
Right.
So perhaps we might start our conversation with some working definitions of that topic. What is power play? Can you define for us?
Yeah, this is you're gonna make me work here. It's well, you know, the thing about a lot of this stuff, Richard, you know, sex and sexuality is such a non-linear subject. So to put any kind of a intellectual jargon to try to understand it, I tell people it's like trying to verbalize why some people might like the taste of licorice and some might not. But that being said, I will give it a try.
It is. I think you're perfectly correct on that. And that's one of the reasons why I decided to launch this series of podcasts because I was getting feedback from a lot of my viewers and listeners, and they were saying, you know, well done, Dr. Dick, but anything out there for
Yeah,
kinksters? And so
absolutely.
there are people with different tastes than what we have been covering so far, and thus this
Sure.
series.
Yeah, but we'll get back to that.
Great.
But so to define power play, I might also add to that the term power exchange, as I've
Aha. Good, good,
referred to
good.
as some. So basically, I would say that power play refers to an erotic or sexual experience between two people or numerous people where one party is exuding control of some kind over the other
Aha.
within a domain of pre-negotiated consensual parameters. And the person exuding the control would be referred to as the dominant, or in slang terms, the top. And the receiving party would be referred to as the submissives, or the bottom, so to speak. And I would say that that's the most clinical approach I can give that term, but
So a lot of the vocabulary you just used is also used in the BDSM world. Is BDSM and power play or power exchange synonymous?
In some ways, they are. Now, BDSM is a shortened acronym. Originally, the acronym was BDDSSM, and
Holy mackerel.
that stood for bondage, domination, domination, submission, sadomasochism. And it's a bit of an all-encompassing umbrella term referring to that eroticized interpersonal relationships between the participants, where roles are taken on, where, like I said, one party is exuding some sort of a domination or control over the other party.
And this doesn't have to be like a physical domination. It could be emotional, it could be psychological, it could
Absolutely, yeah.
great, good, good, good. Because there's a lot of people who, you know, imagine power play or power exchange as something that, you know, needs whips and chains and all kinds of things. And I guess that's not necessarily the case.
Not necessarily. I mean, there, you know, things like flogging, or, you know, the whips and chains, as you re refer to, can certainly be a component of it, if, you know, the element of pain is one of the aspects that are brought into the play. But it, you know, doesn't have to be. I mean, there are components of, say, humiliation, or subservience, or, you know, there's many, many different
Right,
facets
right, right,
to BDSM
right. Yeah.
that fall under that umbrella. Yeah.
So BDSM is considered a kink, right?
Yes.
But not all kinks are BDSM.
Correct. Now, kink is another kind of a tricky term.
Uh-huh.
I refer to kink as, you know, your kink is kind of a a looser term. It can refer to when props or costumes or role-playing are brought into sex to enhance the physical intimacy with a partner. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that may be something so simple as, you know, bringing in a feather and tickling your partner while they're tied down.
Mm-hmm. Or up.
Yeah, exactly. Or, you know, and, you know, it could be a very loose term, whereas, you know, BDSM is more of a heightened playing field of kink.
And just to add to the soup, besides kink, there is also fetish, which is not the same thing necessarily, although it might be inclusive.
Right. Well, fetish would be, getting back to that kink conversation, where, say, a prop or a costume is brought in to heighten the sexual experience with your partner, that then becomes fetish when the focus is on the object as opposed to the partner.
Interesting. Interesting, yeah. Interesting. And this is why I invited you. You are so knowledgeable. I mean, I think I have a grasp on a good portion of this, but this is not my area of expertise, and that's why I'm reaching out to folks like you to help me and our audience understand.
Well, and by the way, thank you for that. But I might also add, you know, this is I'm speaking from my own personal experience and
sure.
observation.
This is not gospel.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's you know, people that are going to be listening to my opinion of this and saying, yeah, no, I don't quite agree with him.
Yeah.
The experience of sex and sexuality are not unlike the experience of say spirituality.
Yes,
it's very very individualized and. You know, it all boils down to chemistry and electricity experience between a person and another person or group of people.
Well, continuing that metaphor, which is I think is a brilliant one, one would say then that there are some purists out there who are very dogmatic about things, and it must be this way, and it's got to be said that way, and this is the only expression of this, and I think that kind of dogmatic understanding of stuff gets in the way of most people's accessibility to perhaps playing with or trying to grasp the underpinnings of what we're talking about.
Those people that are dogmatic, as you say, we refer to those people as a total pain in the ass.
And not in a good way.
No, it's just, I mean, there's definitely a lot of people out there that, for one reason or another, it could be that their ego is involved and they are somehow labeled as an expert mm-hmm. in a particular field, and it takes them away from, you know, that which is the erotic
yeah.
experience of what it is they're talking about.
Yeah.
Or on the flip side, there is some component of fear around what it is they're experiencing.
Yes.
And, you know, like I said, people, as human beings, I think we are designed to try to intellectualize and psychologically understand why we're wired the way we are.
Yeah.
And getting back to that licorice conversation, I mean, there's just some things that it's just simply wired. You can't put a logical explanation to it, and if we accepted those elements of ourselves in the same way that we accept, you know, why we like the tastes of certain things, I think we'd have a lot more sexual freedom and a lot less self-judgment.
Right, that would be lovely and wonderful.
Yeah.
And also, one of the reasons why I'm doing this series is to help people open up their minds to other people's experiences and do it with in a way that is not demeaning to either the people who practice that or for those in my audience who are not participatory in
right.
those behaviors.
Here's a
question I get on my site all the time.
Okay.
Are people who are into BDSM psychologically messed up?
I thought everybody was psychologically messed up.
Good for you.
I have yet to find someone who is not psychologically messed up, Richard. I mean, that's just... No, but in all seriousness, God, that's such a common question.
But why would an in quotes normal person subject him or herself to pain and humiliation and or inflict pain and humiliation on others? Why would a normal person do that?
Well, you got to be careful of that word "normal," though,
exactly.
Richard.
Exactly.
Okay,
and that's
why
I put it in quotes.
Yeah, because I mean, who is deciding what normal is and, uh-huh. and what isn't? Well, first of all, if anything, a person who engages in BDSM play, I would think, in some ways, are more healthy minded psychologically, because to participate in this kind of a playing field, it requires you to be much more self actualized. To have a greater understanding of yourself, a greater acceptance of yourself and what it is you're into, and you also have, you have to have a heightened sense of communication. Now, that's not to say that there aren't people that participate, including myself, that don't have psychological problems. I mean, I think we all do. Is one caused by the other? No. I think in whatever field, of sexuality or really anything else. I mean, religion,
exactly.
Occupation. You can always somehow try to tie in that this person is the way they are because of some sort of a psychological problem,
yeah.
And that just gets back to the human design of not being comfortable with the way you're wired.
Yeah.
And we somehow try to have some degree of power over that by trying to figure out what the cause of that is.
My take on it is that people who don't understand what's going on in power play or power exchange or BDSM or whatever we're going to call it, they are filtering what they think they know or what they think they are seeing through their own experience, and they are not adding in the essential component of consent.
Yes.
That the participants in this scene or this activity or this behavior have taken a great deal of time working out the parameters of the play that they are doing. It's like high opera as opposed to vaudeville. You know, it's highly choreographed. It's highly ritualized, and it's. Without understanding that, it makes no sense to the casual observer, it doesn't seem to me.
Yeah. But if the parties involved get some sort of a psychological benefit out of engaging in it,
good. Yes.
Then, all the more power to them.
Yes.
And there is that component of it, God, I'm sort of jumping all over the map here,
but I
do know of people, and myself included, that actually get psychological benefit from engaging in certain BDSM activities, if that makes sense.
No, it is cathartic. I think we're going to cover that in depth a little bit later. But there's got to be payback. That's the thing that I'm pretty conscious of, in terms of when a behavior, when we're doing sex play of any sort, vanilla to chocolate, there's got to be a payback. There has to be pleasure. There has to be other kinds of things. Because if it doesn't, we stop doing the behavior. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
So let's talk about the role of, let's say, endorphins and adrenaline in power play. Because
sure.
That seems to be one of the reasons, the common reasons why people participate.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Well, let's talk about the idea like of pain. You're asking why would a person subject themselves to engaging in some sort of pain play?
Uh-huh.
Now, first of all, let me preface this that I myself am not into pain.
Mm-hmm.
I do like to participate in all kinds of BDSM activities, but I personally am not into pain.
Uh-huh.
However, I have lots of friends who are. So I'll speak like what the experience is for them. I know a man who, for instance, likes to be flogged, and there is a certain endorphin rush that he gets by kind of psychologically making amends with the feeling of pain that he gets on his back when he's being thudded with the flogger.
Right.
And the pain then turns into kind of a heightened thrill.
Yes.
Experience. And then it starts to become a little bit of a game. Like, I wonder if I could take a little bit more and how that might feel. And, you know, the person who is doing the flogging is very much checked into his body. Like, okay, make sure I'm not hurting him. If it's getting to be too much, he is going to give me the signal saying it needs to stop. And to be able to slowly, you know, heighten and go beyond what you think your pain threshold would be, there is a certain endorphin rush in that. Now, okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say that then there, we're talking about, again, this is a good word for the name of this series, edge. We're talking about an edge that is pain and pleasure, the pain and pleasure edge. And this is really important because most people would be able to identify some of this in their own life. Let's just say I'm working very intently at my keyboard trying to pound out one of my columns, and I don't want to be distracted, but my boyfriend or the dog comes into the room or something and wants my attention, or the boyfriend nibbles at my neck, which, let's just say, that's a very pleasurable thing under certain circumstances, like in foreplay and whatnot. That's very pleasurable. But when I'm concentrating on writing in my column and I'm late and I got to get this done, and he does that, that's not pleasurable. That is actually irritating and painful, at least to some degree. So each and every one of us, I suspect, if we look at our sexual experiences, we will notice that there is that edge, you know, where we dance on that place where it's pain and pleasure.
Yeah, yeah. And everything is very contextual. I mean, I'm not, you know, saying that you're going to have that relationship with you know, pain all hours of the day, you know, but you know, perhaps within the context of a very hot erotic scene with somebody.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, that it might come into play.
Right. And also, when it is eroticized, I mean, if somebody slapped me in the face in a, like, just walking down the street, that would be offensive and hurtful.
Yes.
But, you know, a slap on the ass, you know, in the throes of sexual passion might actually be a huge turn-on and,
yes,
you know, crank things up. Even a notch higher, and you know, add to the pleasure.
Yes,
it's a very interesting kind of thing.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
So people figured this out a long time ago, it seems to me, and then they began to incorporate these behaviors, this activity, into sexual play.
Yeah, yeah. And it doesn't necessarily, I mean, like, that's just one example. I mean, there are some people that might be into the same kind of dynamic from a psychological standpoint, which would be humiliation play. I know of a female couple that engage in a very, very erotic interrogation scene. And her submissive really, really gets off on this verbal degradation thing that that her dominant puts her through. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not for everybody, but there, like I said, there is something in this girl's life that that this kind of play creates a feeling of balance.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, and you know, it's ritualized and it's set in context and it's consensual. So all of those kinds of things, you know, set it apart, you know, from, you know, I want to be humiliated and degraded all my life. I mean, that's not the same thing.
Right, right.
So is it fair to assume that you've been both dom and sub?
It's very fair to assume. It's very true.
Well,
and I remain so. I remain so, yes.
That's, again, to my mind, and this is something that I've preached throughout my life as a sex therapist, is that in order to be a really good bottom, you ought to top on occasion.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to be a really good top, you ought to bottom on occasion, in whatever context we are talking about topping and bottoming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's definitely true, yeah.
Have you a preference for one or the other?
Oh, it just depends on what time of day it is.
and the sun is out. Or if it's
yeah,
warm.
Exactly. Well, because, you know, like I said, I have a sir of my own that that I'm in full service to, and then I have submissives of my own.
Interesting.
That, you know, that satisfy the dominant in me. Uh-huh. And then I also have my full-time relationship.
Wow.
So, you know, all elements of myself are taken care of, so to speak. You know.
When do you have time to touch yourself in purely, for goodness sake?
Oh, my God. I know. It all boils down to time management, Richard.
And, you know, when they run over, you know, I have to change. Do you have to change your hat, so to speak, as it were?
From
top to bottom or dom to sub?
Sometimes you do. Yeah.
Is there a different kind of high associated with each role?
Oh, gosh, yes. As a sir or as a dominant, one of the biggest endorphin highs that I get is, especially when I'm playing with somebody new or they're engaging in an activity that is new for them, when I see that I have spoken some sort of a possibility to them and they're aroused by it, and then they take a chance and they hand over their trust to me because they know that I'm going to take complete care of them, and they realize that they're going to have some sort of a heightened experience in engaging in that space with me. That in and of itself is such a tremendous honor. And then, you know, however long the scene lasts, and it may be, you know, 20 minutes or it may be several hours or overnight, when I see how much they've changed as a result of taking the chance and engaging in that with me, it's one of the biggest highs I've experienced, and you know, when they look at me with these just bright-eyed, you know, colors in their face, just saying I am a forever changed person as a result of doing that. Thank you. I never thought I could engage in something like that, and it was so incredible. Thank you, sir. That's an amazing thing.
A lot of people in extreme sports talk about the same kind of thing.
Yes, absolutely.
They're pushing their boundaries and that they are liberating themselves from the fear factor, and you know, they are a changed being. I mean,
yes.
I think that's an exceptionally beautiful way of putting it. It does change one.
Yeah, and then as a submissive, you know, the relationship that I have with my sir, my sir knows me very, very well. You know, he knows exactly the buttons of mine that need to get pushed, and he knows. He just knows all the inner workings of myself, mm-hmm. And when I have my sessions with him, and they are very, very few and far between, I don't know, just being able to hand myself over to him, yes. And have this amazing feeling of being taken care of. And being controlled, but and knowing that I can hand my trust over to him 100%, right. Knowing that I'm going to be a better person as a result of it, and that it pleases him.
Yes.
On top of all that, that is also a very, very arousing feeling. Mm-hmm. Plus, not to mention all the things he does to me. I mean, that's just...
many power players speak in terms of BDSM being both recreational and cathartic, and we mentioned the word cathartic just a few moments mm-hmm. ago. I would really like to elaborate on that if we could discuss that some.
Sure.
What would be the recreational as opposed to the cathartic nature of power exchange or power play?
Okay, well, from a recreational standpoint, let's just say that there's, you know, certain things that get your dick hard. Okay, like
you wet.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. Yeah, like you may be someone who likes to have clothespins put on your nipples.
Mm.
And, you know, have the top, you know, sit there and fling the clothespins or the nipple clamps for hours, and then maybe drip hot wax on top of you in that area, and that just is just arousing, and you can jack yourself off while that's happening and bring yourself to orgasm. Okay, that would just be good old-fashioned recreational fun. A cathartic example would be, say, or like, now I myself am very much into rope bondage. I love tying up somebody and holding them hostage. for hours on end. I have a friend from years back who he's actually the CEO of a very well-known corporation, is in charge of millions and millions of dollars. He has three kids from back when he was married. He also has a partner because he's now, you know, out of the closet. He has a tremendous amount of responsibility in all elements of his life. And when I play with him for 3 or 4 hours, I immobilize him, I tie him up, I blindfold him and I gag him, and I take all that away from him. And it's the one moment in his life where he has no other choice but to relinquish control.
Interesting.
And it's...
He must gravitate to that, you know, to balance out, you know, the other part of his life, yes?
I swear, Richard, he goes out of body when I do it. Exactly. And I don't necessarily, you know, do sexual things to him. It's just the amount of peace that he feels, yes, out of being bound and not being able to do anything about it. Just it balances out all those other elements of his life, and he becomes a better CEO, a better partner, a better father to his kids. Mm-hmm. You know, better able to be that controlling person in the other elements of his life when he submits to me. So that'd be an example of something cathartic.
Yeah, like Janis Joplin used to sing, "Longing for the freedom of my chains."
Yes, yes.
You know, I see both recreational and cathartic elements to a lot of the work that I do as a masseur and body worker. And while it's not, you know, as heightened an art form as what you practice, I do see that. I mean, I know when that people come for massage and body work, and it can be, you know, fun and relaxing and enjoyable just as it is. But I also know that with the power of my hands, that I'm able to manipulate people's bodies, and sometimes I come across something that liberates sadness or joy or frustration or anger or disappointment that seems to be locked up in his or her muscles. And when I manipulate the muscles, those emotions flow. Several times on my massage table, people have broken into weeping, not because my work was so bad, but that, you know, they were freed up to express something that they perhaps were holding on to for much too long.
Isn't that wonderful when you see that happen? Yeah,
it is.
And to know that you're the person who unlocked that for them?
Yes. You know, and when it first happened to me, this was many years ago, and I was working on at the time with a lot of sick and dying people and their partners and, you know, husbands and wives and family members and whatnot. And the grief that was built up, particularly among gay men who were watching, you know, their friends and relatives and whatnot die of AIDS in just, you know, one right after the other, where we didn't have time to grieve, that,
sure,
it, you know, that kind of thing opened us up and allowed us to express, you know, something. And so I'm thinking that if in my little way of dealing with people, and if those emotions are caught up in our bodies, then possibly, probably, power players and are also able to free up emotions that are trapped with inside them.
There's not a whole lot different, but from what you're describing and what I'm describing. I mean, you're using your hands and I'm using a flogger or rope, you know, but you're still talking about having, you know, getting access to things within the inner psyche of
yeah,
somebody,
yeah,
that... I remember, you know, I went to university and I studied theater, and one of the lecturers, the guest lecturers that came in to speak to us, talked about why it was so important to support theater and the arts.
Mm-hmm.
And he was from Russia. In fact, the person had spent time in jail because he had come up with a theatrical design that was considered too revolutionary
back in the communist days, and he was actually jailed for it. But he said it's very, very important to be involved with this stuff because theater and art communicates to people in ways that the written word or doctrine does not.
Yes.
And I think it's something very, very similar to what you and I are talking about. You know, there's other means of getting access to a person's experience other than just the confines of logical intellect.
Right. Well, you're absolutely right because in the days when I was active as a Catholic priest, I used to be able to see.
Richard! Now you're just like you've changed the whole landscape that I look at you now, and I might add I'm a little aroused.
Good. Oh, see how you are. You are a pervert. I knew that. what I was saying, or what I was about to say, was that I knew that there was a really close connection between religious ecstasy and sexual passion.
Yes.
And that was an amazing kind of thing. And there were lots of people in the Catholic tradition that I studied for many years that would sublimate their sexuality in order to blossom into religious ecstasy. It was a very interesting thing. So
yeah,
we'll have to talk about my life as a priest another time.
Oh my God, I know, it's just like...
And look at the time, holy cow. I am not nearly done with you. Can I invite you back for next week?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, good, because there's way more things that I want to talk to you about.
The tip of the iceberg, eh?
good. So between now and then, before we go, could you give us your web address so that we can meet with you in cyberspace in the meantime?
Oh, certainly. Okay, so it's www.dartsdomain, that's dartsdomain.com. And you'll see all kinds of incarnations of myself on there.
Wonderful. So we'll be seeing you there then.
Wonderful, yes.
Until next week. Bye now.
Bye, Richard.
Great show, huh? Well, that's it for today, sex fans. Tune in next week for part two of my discussion with Dart and more sex advice with an edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Dr. Dick's Stockroom. Listen up, you guys. If your sex life needs a little sprucing up, and who doesn't, I want you to mosey on over to my online sex emporium and pick out something really naughty for yourself or all the other pervs in your life. I mean, if you can't find what you're looking for in my stockroom, you'd better just call off the search right now. Dr. Dick has put together a dazzling array of products that will liven up even the most ho-hum sex life. Not sure what to buy? Take a look at my monthly ever-so-popular sex toy awareness feature, or my product reviews. You'll find the product reviews in the product review tab at the top of drdicksexadvice.com and my sex toy awareness feature by looking in the category section of the sidebar of my site. It's chock full of swell gift-giving ideas. Look for the My Stockroom tab right there on the front page of DrDickSexAdvice.com.
You use your tongue prettier than a $20 whore.
That's why I make all the really big money. Say, would you like to become a sponsor for one or more of my sex advice podcasts? As you know, I plug a product and service at the beginning and end of each show, just like I'm doing now. Each podcast has its own posting on my site, along with the name of the podcast sponsor and a banner for that product or service. The beauty part about this unique opportunity is that once a sponsor's ad is included in a particular podcast, that sponsor is embedded there forever. Your sponsorship also underscores your social conscience. Your marketing dollars will not only go to promote your product, but you will be doing so while helping disseminate badly needed sex education and sexual enrichment messaging. Simply put, you just can't get a better bang for your advertising dollar. For more information, contact me at drdicksexadvice.com. That's dr_dick@drdicksexadvice.com. And look for all Dr. Dick's podcasts on iTunes. You'll find me in the podcast section, obviously.
All you have to do is search for Dr. Dick's Sex Advice. And don't forget to subscribe. Leave a comment when you do. Until next week, remember, sex is good. And good sex? Hey, that's even better. Over and out.